Good morning. This is Dallas Townsend with a CBS World News Roundup. Fighting goes on today in Nicaragua between government troops and insurgents trying to overthrow President Anastasio Somoza. Most of the hostilities appear to be taking place around three northern cities, Chinandega, Estelí, and León. Bruce Hall has the story there.
It is Nicaragua's Independence Day, and it is widely believed that the rebel forces here are going to make some dramatic move today to demonstrate their growing strength in this badly divided country. The government troops of President Anastasio Somoza have clamped a tight lid on the country, strictly enforcing a dusk-to-dawn curfew. In order to help repel any possible armed attack, crates and crates of ammunition, along with numerous guardsmen, were moved to the roof of a major hotel overlooking the National Guard headquarters and the offices of President Somoza. Roadblocks have been put up along many of Managua's main streets, making travel in the capital city slow and difficult. During the night, a large section of León, Nicaragua's second largest city, was burned. The fires began as government planes strafed rebel strongholds, and government troops began a sweep through the city, which has been in rebel control for more than half of the past month. Refugees streaming out of the city called it a massacre, saying that the streets were littered with bodies. Bruce Hall, CBS News, León, Nicaragua.
Pravda this morning rebuked Senator Edward Kennedy for talking about the possible release of 18 families from the Soviet Union, and it seems to cast doubt on whether they'll be allowed to leave after all. David Willis reports from Moscow.
The rebuke came in a sharply worded comment in the Communist Party newspaper today. Last Monday, Senator Kennedy told a press conference after returning from the Soviet Union that Soviet officials had assured him that the applications of 18 families to leave the country would be reviewed. Kennedy said he had every expectation they would be allowed to go to the U.S. or to Israel. The Washington Post praised Kennedy on Wednesday for the expert use of quiet diplomacy. Today, Pravda, without mentioning Kennedy by name, condemned the efforts of those American politicians who tried to pose as champions of human rights. Pravda denied that Moscow could be more easily persuaded in private than in public and urged American politicians to use more tact. Pravda rejected any effort to interfere in Soviet internal affairs. Pravda added that Moscow would allow no one to be a judge or a lawyer in matters which concern only itself. David Willis for CBS News, Moscow.
For the third time in 2 years, and for the ninth time since the 1974 revolution, Portugal this morning is without a government. The regime headed by Alfredo da Nobre Costa collapsed last night after his economic austerity program was defeated in parliament on a vote of almost exactly 2-1. Da Nobre Costa had been in office only 17 days and never actually had a chance to govern. The previous regime, headed by socialist Mario Soares, lasted 16 months. President Yanis now faces the difficult task of finding a new prime minister. The Middle East summit talks are still in progress today at Camp David. Only the most fragmentary information is being released, who saw whom, when, and for how long, and almost nothing more than that. The summit conference is lasting longer than anyone expected before it began, and that leads to some reflections by CBS News White House correspondent Bob Schieffer.
Who would have believed when they arrived here that today, 11 days later, they would all still be here? But then no one expected that this would be the usual kind of summit. After all, they did not come here to put the finishing touches on some agreement that had been worked out at a lower level, as is usually the case. This was billed as a working session, and while little else about it is leaked out, indeed it has been that. The delegations have met among themselves. There have been meetings both formally and informally among the various delegations, but not since Thursday of last week has there been a working session that included all three of the principals together. Even so, summit spokesman Jody Powell insists that should not be taken as a sign of stalemate. By the same token, he has sought to dispel ideas that success, an agreement of some kind, is imminent. On Thursday, he was telling reporters the summit was moving into its final stages, but now the word is the final stage may be the longest stage of all, and that this marathon session may run on into the early part of next week. The goal remains as it was when they came here 11 days ago to find a framework for peace, but it remains an elusive goal, and as Powell is now telling reporters, more progress and more flexibility are essential if it is to be achieved. Bob Schieffer, CBS News, Thurmont, Maryland.
The Cairo newspaper Al-Akhbar this morning says chances of success at the summit are virtually nil, and it says President Sadat will probably leave Camp David for Washington during the day. Cairo's two other leading newspapers say the conference has run into obstacles and no agreement is in sight. They hedge those remarks, though, with many qualifications. The Egyptian embassy in Washington told CBS News this morning that Sadat will not leave the summit prematurely. Henry Kissinger, at least in public, sounds optimistic about the summit. Speaking at a Republican fundraiser in Detroit last night, the former Secretary of State said the conference would be a success if it produced nothing more than a framework for further negotiations between Egypt and Israel. The House Assassinations Committee today is examining one of the many puzzling side issues connected with the murder of President Kennedy. George Herman tells us about it.
The committee this morning turns its attention to the famous photographs of Lee Harvey Oswald wearing a pistol and brandishing a rifle in his own backyard. Various critics of the Warren Commission report have agreed with Oswald's assertion that they're phonies made by superimposing his face on another man's body. But Marina Oswald Porter told the committee repeatedly this week that she personally took the photographs at her husband's insistence. Yesterday, a handwriting expert said he and his panel were all agreed that the handwriting and the signature on the back of one photograph were clearly that of Lee Harvey Oswald. And two photographic experts began testimony designed to show that the pictures were definitely taken by Oswald's camera. Committee counsel Blakey has hinted at the importance of today's testimony by announcing that a British police expert who had pronounced the pictures fakes had seen their evidence and had very largely changed his verdict. George Herman, CBS News, Washington.
The Marine Corps this morning is releasing a report that deals with charges of misconduct by Marine recruiters around the country. Charges that they falsified records and gave out copies of entrance tests in advance to help potential recruits get into the Corps. CBS News Pentagon correspondent Ike Pappas has details.
The report admits that some recruiters, eager to meet enlistment goals, falsified the police and school records of potential recruits, but that no widespread malpractices by recruiters were uncovered, as has been charged. The charges arose after a Marine recruit in Cleveland, Ohio, attempted suicide, saying later that recruiters failed to come through with the promises they made to get him to enlist. The report says during the 18-month period studied, only 3,000 out of 75,000 Marine recruits were discharged for erroneous or fraudulent enlistment, and that's a pretty good average according to the Marines. The report says Marine recruiters are to blame for not thoroughly investigating the backgrounds of potential recruits to determine if they are correct. In addition, the Marines claim that school and law officials often refuse to turn over documents, fearing they might be violating the Privacy Act, and the Marines want Congress to pass new laws to make it easier to get the information. Ike Pappas, CBS News, Washington.
The FBI says the overall number of reported crimes around the country during the first half of the year was 2% lower than in the same period in 1977, but reports of violent crimes with rape in first place rose 1%. A federal judge in New York today will conclude a hearing on allegations that two close associates of President Carter were involved in efforts to fix criminal charges against fugitive millionaire Robert Vesco. Fred Graham has details.
Spencer Lee, a Georgia lawyer who's alleged by some to have contacted presidential advisors Hamilton Jordan and Charles Curbo about a scheme to fix Vesco's legal problems in exchange for $10 million, will testify today in federal court in New York. The hearing was called by the Securities and Exchange Commission to find out if securities illegally obtained by Vesco were involved in the deal. Lee has admitted that he received $10,000 to approach his old friend Hamilton Jordan about the deal, but Lee insists that he never did raise the point with Jordan. Yesterday, a secretary testified that she typed and mailed letters for Lee about the Vesco deal to both Curbo and Jordan, and that she placed calls to both of them for Lee. Both men have denied knowing anything about such a scheme, and Lee has backed them up in earlier statements about the case. Fred Graham, CBS News, New York.
Firefighters in Wichita, Kansas have been on strike for 4 days now in a wage dispute, and last night about one-third of the city's police officers took the same course. They turned in their badges and walked out in support of the firemen. The chief of police immediately began firing them.